They're more industry courses. And I know the president, Mike McDonough, says, look, you come from my community college. You get a two-year degree, and I'll give you another half a year in some certifications on the skills that we need, and you can make more than a four-year college degree will offer you in New York City, and you will have paid a fraction and owe a fraction of what that of our education will cost. So, I mean, we need to rethink education. We need to educate people in the areas that we need skills, and we need to stop them from taking courses that will never result in future jobs that pay any decent amount of money. I mean, liberal arts. There's a lot of jobs that need lots of education before they pay money. You need to have either a PhD or a doctorate in some things. And there's nothing wrong with that. But if you think you're going to go to a four-year liberal arts school and come back and earn $75,000, you're going to be pretty surprised that that's not the case. And if you go into, in Hunterdon or Somerset County, social service, which probably is $50,000 range, you're only going to be able to afford $1,250 a month towards your rent or mortgage. If there's two of you, it could be $2,500 a month. It needs to be rethought, and it is being rethought, and it's being discussed on a continuous basis. Some high-end fallout has resulted in the changes in the Tax Act. I mean, we're seeing 500 people a month leave New Jersey to go elsewhere. Florida seems to be the big state to move to at this point in time. It's ongoing. It's the cost of living is cheaper. The taxation, at least at the state and local level, is much cheaper. And we're taxing people right out of the state. On the other side, the commercial real estate market is flourishing. And we're almost full when you come down 78 and 22 and 31 and look into the commercials that were once empty, not 5 years ago, or 40% empty anyway. I think if I was to paint a picture, the picture I would have to paint is we have never had the prosperity that we have right now in the last 20 years. I go all the way back to 2000 in New Jersey. We have full employment. We have jobs paying more than they used to. We have jobs wanting for people. We have people that are looking to get educated in the jobs that are in the area so they don't have to go over towards New York and pay twice for everything. We have a wonderful economy with minimal problem things that we had just a few years ago. We don't have the foreclosure in any great extent going on. We don't have people losing their jobs that was going on. We have jobs that are wanting for people that we don't have. We have people earning more than they used to. We have minimum wage paying $15 an hour. Remember all the arguments to get minimum wage up to $15 an hour? It's gone away. You don't even hear it discussed anymore. Try to push a door open on into a restaurant or a food store, and there's a help wanted sign on the outside. They're paying what we wanted, which was $15 minimum wage. It should seek its own level like this, and it is, and that is good news. I think if we continue and we have a modest adjustment, and forget the politics for now, because the politics to a great extent is just theater, it's positioning, it's, yeah, there's some truth to everything and there's a bunch of non-truth to everything, but if we just take a look at the economy, we take a look at the employment rate, we take a look at the job situation, we take a look at what we're paying people, we take a look at house pricing going in the right direction. If we add it all up, what we need are more people that can match the jobs we have open and more houses, more in the above the affordable housing level, the what we call free market level, where first-time people out of college a year or two can start buying smaller houses or at least a condo. I can't tell you how many people will come to me and say, I'm thinking about renting a condo for $1,500. I said, you probably could buy it for $1,300 if you have a little credit and a little money to put down. Not everybody wants to do that, but the economics are there. So I, Joe Peters, sitting here on November 5th, 2019, at roughly 3:55 p.m., I'm telling you, we're in pretty good shape. I like what I see. I'm looking forward to getting into next year because I have four or five people already talking to me about listing their house, and I can say it wasn't this way a year ago, and I think we're going to have another banner year. Will the financial situation correct itself a little bit or a little more? Yeah, I think it will, because it can't go on forever. It's always corrected itself. It's not that we're doing something wrong and it's going to turn around on us. It's just a cyclical thing. I think it will correct itself. Will it be what we saw last time? No way in hell. It's going to be a mild correction. It's going to be a correction back to normalcy, and it'll slow down the pace of sales. What do we need to do in order to make things better? We need to find a way to build more entry-level housing above the affordable housing, but more into the free market level, and we need to find a way to fill the jobs that we have open. And if we do all of that, I think we can look at a rosy next 24 months or so. And forget the politics, I think we're in fairly good shape. This is Joe Peters signing out. It is November 5th, 2019. It's roughly 5 minutes to four. And I will be back next week with Ron Monaco from Reddington Township, but we're going to talk about what's going on in Reddington. Thank you very much.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
Hey, give me a call. I don't bite. If I'm not already talking to somebody else, you're probably going to be surprised. I pick up the phone and talk to you when you do call. Joe Peters, 908-238-0118. See you next week along with Ron Monaco.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell thinks it's unlikely that President Trump would be removed from office in an impeachment trial.
If it were today, I don't think there's any question it would not lead to a removal.
Talking with reporters at the Capitol, McConnell argues that House Democrats seem hell-bent on impeaching the president. The Kentucky Republican also says,
well, I'm not going to start commenting on all of these episodes that occur on a daily basis.
A leaked video shows ABC News anchor Amy Robach slamming her own network for allegedly sitting on a Jeffrey Epstein story 3 years ago. The hot mic moment shows Robach venting to colleagues that network executives refused to air an interview that she did with the Epstein accuser. ABC News released a statement saying at the time not all the reporting met our standards to air, but we never stopped investigating this story. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Trump says it's time to wage war on drug cartels in Mexico following the death of 9 Americans in the country. Trump tweeted he wants to wipe the cartels off the face of the earth. Brandon Judd, president of the Border Patrol Council, tells Fox News,
as we continue to do a better job on the border, we can expect to see more violence. It's rare that cartels lash out at American citizens unless we're cutting into their profits, which is what's happening right now with the policies that are taking place. And with the Mexican government becoming a true border security partner,
right,
you can expect to see more violence.
Boeing CEO Dennis Muilenburg is giving up his annual bonus worth millions because of backlash over two deadly crashes of the 737 MAX aircraft. Boeing chairman David Calhoun says Muilenburg called him and recommended he not receive any bonuses, which is most of his compensation. Muilenburg did testify before a House and Senate committee last week on Capitol Hill. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
In Capitol Hill News, FBI Director Christopher Wray is testifying before a Senate Homeland Security Committee. The senator, in his opening statement, discusses some of the threats we face, including from China.
The Chinese government is now targeting our innovation through a wider-than-ever range of actors, not just Chinese intelligence officers conducting both traditional and cyber espionage, but people they enlist to help them, like contract hackers, certain graduate students and researchers, insider threats within U.S. businesses, and a whole variety of other actors working on behalf of China. We see the Chinese government encouraging and even assisting the abuse of incentive plans like the so-called Thousand Talents Program, plans that offer cash and other enticements to bring American information back to China, information that is often actually trade secrets and other innovations stolen from American companies and universities.
Soldier that fights for a declared nation. And I think that we go overboard. I understand being humane, but when we're talking about engaging this enemy that's trying to blend in with civilian populace, they're the ones that are causing the civilian casualties more than anything else. And furthermore, when you look at how we are punishing our young men in these combat situations, to charge them with premeditated murder in a combat zone, you might as well be writing speeding tickets at the Daytona 500.
I like that parallel. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking rules of engagement with Colonel Alan West. Alan, I took a look the other day at the list of soldiers, mostly Army soldiers, a good number of Navy SEALs, and a few Marines on the list that I saw, which I don't pretend to be comprehensive. It's hard for me as a soldier to encourage people to join the military where that might happen to them. Now, I don't think those rules of engagement are still in effect, but I don't know that.
Well, so a lot of them has changed. I mean, and you can tell by the results on the battlefield. I mean, ISIS, their territorial integrity was taken apart so quick because you now have a commander-in-chief that's not micromanaging generals in the field or White House staffers calling down to, you know, the operational and tactical level commanders and bypassing the Pentagon and Joint Chiefs of Staff. So I think that that is why we're successful in getting things done. Can they still be improved? Absolutely. But I think right now what the focus has to be is on these young men that have been wronged over these past few years, and a couple of them have had exculpatory evidence withheld in their cases. And that means that you have military lawyers that are doing things that are unprofessional, unethical, too, that should cause them to be disbarred.
Well, I don't know this to be true, but I believe it's true that when the Army downsized 10 years ago or 15 years ago, somebody decided to keep the JAG Corps, the lawyers, the same number. So now all of a sudden, every battalion has got a lawyer in it. When I was in combat, I served at division level for a while. I never saw one lawyer. And now apparently battalions, and they're interrogating people when they come back from combat. I don't get that at all. That's certainly nothing like any combat unit I could imagine. It's got to be horrible.
Yeah, and it is horrible. And the thing is that it makes guys second-guess themselves in a firefight or in an engagement or a potential engagement. And you and I very well know that in a firefight, in the first 2 to 3 seconds, someone could lose their life. And you don't want to see our troops in combat and in contact, you know, cede over the initiative to the enemy because they're fearful of some lawyer that is sitting back there, you know, fat, dumb, and happy on the forward operating base or at a larger base, you know, having nice hot coffee and hot chow while they're out there doing the work and being the guardians of this republic and being the watchman on the wall.
Yeah, and, you know, I can't even imagine a battalion, a squad, a platoon coming back and having some lawyer say to you, the private standing next to me, did Gillum shoot somebody? Yes. Did he have a good reason to? Because if you'll testify against him, we won't charge you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happening.
And that just, well, I'm already a little nuts, but that makes me even crazier. How do you lead troops like that? How, as a leader, do you not stand up and say, then I resign, get me out of here, I can't live in this environment? How do we have generals who live with that?
Well, it's tough because what ends up happening is these folks break down unit cohesion.
Yeah.
Because they start to, you know, pit, you know, the troops against their combat leaders, you know, being them senior enlisted or officers. And you also have this sense of the commissar, you know, how they used to have in the old Soviet Union army, the person that is there not to support the unit, but to report things up to a different and separate chain of command. And then that also causes a very tentative, very anxiety-oriented atmosphere in a unit because they don't feel that they're free to go out and do their job. They don't feel that they're free, you know, when they have come back from a patrol or whatever to sit down and shoot the you-know-what, as we used to say.
Yeah.
Because someone might be taking notes and someone might come back and do something against them.
And therefore you can't relax. There's more to discuss about this, and Colonel West is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do every day. Then take a break to stay in the area. Colonel West and I will be right back. This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I ordered my men to open fire on the enemy in Vietnam. For doing the same thing in Afghanistan, Lieutenant Clint Lawrence was court-martialed and sent to Fort Leavenworth under President Obama. Now Green Beret Major Matthew Goldstein and Navy SEAL Chief Edward Gallagher have been court-martialed. Killing terrorist combatants ought not to be a crime. To restore freedom to those who fought for ours, sign my petition at restorefreedom.info. Congressman Duncan Hunter and I will deliver your message to Washington. Let's rally for unfairly accused combat warriors. Restorefreedom.info. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This message is paid for by the Uniformed Services League.
This weekend, unplug. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Front Lines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation about abused combat veterans with Colonel Alan West. So we very much agree that one of the problems is there's too many lawyers. I mean, I guess if I was a young lawyer and I joined the Army and they assigned me to a unit, a battalion or something, I'd want to do something. So I guess that's understandable that they go out and try to do the lawyer thing. But I think the Army, I presume Marines, Navy, I don't know about them, needs to reduce the number of lawyers, one, to save the money, but two, to help us restore combat readiness and combat cohesion. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, but, you know, I think that one of the most important things is that I like the Marine Corps model. Every Marine is a rifleman, first and foremost. And so even if you're going to be a JAG officer in the Marine Corps, you're going to go to the basic school, TBS, and you're going to learn what it's like to be, you know, a ground combat Marine. That's their foundation. So I think that when you have people that, you know, finish law school, you slap a uniform on them, and then they go to a unit, and all of a sudden there's a JAG officer there, whichever side of the JAG bench they're on, they don't have the same understanding of what it means to be out there at the tactical level and really be around those troops on the ground. And then all of a sudden, as we talked about in the previous segment, you know, when they're there, you know, they create a sense of anxiety and they create a sense of distrust because you have your soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marines that are there and they don't really understand why this person is here, what they're to do. Is he taking notes? Is he keeping a list? I mean, what have you? Well, you know, think about the movie Lone Survivor, how here you have a compromised, you know, Navy SEAL reconnaissance mission and their biggest concern in dealing with those Afghan sheep herders was that they didn't want bodies to be found, and next thing you know, they were going to be on CNN or whatever as war criminals. So what did they do? They let them go, and it ended up three of the four in that team lost their lives, and then we also had that helicopter that was shot down as part of that rescue mission. And so that's what we don't want to have. We don't want to have our young men and women on the ground second-guessing themselves. And a great case, you know, Clint Lawrence, a Texan, yep, young man who ordered the firing on of the Taliban. I mean, the Taliban uses motorcycles. They scout out your position, and then they report back what they have seen. They were ordered not to come near the position, you know, and they continued to close on the position. Clint ordered the firing of them.
Hello, it's Joe Peters, and we're ready to get started. It's a little bit after 3:10 on Tuesday afternoon. I'm doing the show an hour early today, so I'm going to play the things that we play at 3:10 instead of at 4:10. I'll be right back.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
So this is the point where they asked me to give you the weather report. It is exactly 3:15. It's scenic downtown Flemington. It is the 5th of November, not 2019, and the weather right now is a balmy 59 degrees. It's going to go down to 37 overnight, 54 tomorrow, 32 overnight, 57 on Thursday for a little bit of rain or snow. It's going to go to 30 overnight, 43 on Friday, that is cold, of 21 overnight, 43 on Saturday of 28 overnight. It looks like Thursday's the only day that's threatening. Let me get back and play a few more things, and we'll get started with our show.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, Hunterdon Chamber Radio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
So this is Joe Peters once again, and we're going to get started with Real Estate Matters. And today we're going to talk about what's happening in Hunterdon County over the month that just finished, which is October. It's November 5th. So I compose or compile this newsletter, which you can find on my site, jpeters.com, from various news resources and seminars that I attend and from various articles that I read. It's intended to be accurate, but like everything else, you should verify all the numbers that you're hearing here and make sure they're accurate for your situation. We're going to start with Hunterdon County. Based on the last full month's contract sales, statistics show an approximate 6 months or normal supply of inventory. That means, in effect, if we didn't sell anything else for 6 months, we have 881 units for sale. We sold 147. They all went under contract in the last 30 days. In 6 months, that 881 would all disappear or absorb. So we have 6 months' supply. Needless to say, inventory comes on every month. Some people withdraw their listing. Some people, cancel their listing. So it's a constant moving picture. But 212 new properties came on, 881 in total, 147 sold. Divide 881 by 147, things are normal. You get above 6 months, there's pressure on prices. You get below 4 months, and we're probably getting multiple offers and prices are starting to go up. Of the sales last month, once again, there were 212. There were 147 sales. I'm sorry, the new listings were 212. 147 sales last month, up from 105 the month before. So we had a very busy October. 74% of those sales were under $500,000. 26% of those sales were between over 500, and of those, 12 or 8% of the total sales were above 700,000. So we sold in the 7s, 3, in the 800s, 2, in the 900s, 2, and in the $1 million range and up, we sold 5. So we sold 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, or 12 sales over $700,000. What was our average sale price? Well, if you take a look at everything that happened, you'll see that the properties coming on the market were about $482,500, and the properties going under contract were about $430,000, about 13% less, maybe 11% less. That's a pretty good spread. Typically, houses come on a little aggressively. They need to be marked down once, maybe twice before they sell them. We always advise people to get the price up front, but a lot of sellers want to test the market, and that's what you see here. And then we also break these numbers down not only by price point, we break them down by town. So let's look at the towns that seem to have a lot of inventory. Delaware, 44 units for sale, sold two. That's 22 months worth of supply. Kingwood, 29 for sale, sold two. That's 15 months supply. Milford, 10 for sale, sold one. That's worth who sold two. It would double the sales. That's a 10-month supply. Places that are doing really, really good, Clinton Township, between them, 22 sales. Raritan Township, 25 sales. And Reddington Township, 19 sales. Those four areas, Clinton Township being two, Reddington, Raritan being the other two, comprise about 45% of all our sales. Sometimes it's almost 55%. So that's, if you come to Hunterdon County, where most people want to live, because it's easy to get to New York from there, and it's easy to commute to wherever you're going to the east. That's Hunterdon County. Let me talk a little about Somerset County so you can understand what's going on in our sister county, one county to the east or one county closer to New York. Based on the last full month supply there, we had 373 properties going under contract and 420 new ones getting listed. 373 went under contract compared to 420 the month before, and 434 got listed. So we have a total of 1,281 properties, 373 sold, divide 1,281 by 373, you get three. We have 3 months supply. The whole county of Somerset is doing really well. It's under what we call the normal 4 to 6. Once again, 4 to 6 is normal, prices are stable, 7 and above, prices are having pressure, 4 and below, prices are rising. 57% of the sales, remember I said it was 74% at 100, and 57% of Somerset are under 500. 33 are between 500 and 1 million, and 22, or 10% of the sales, are over $1 million. So they have a much higher price point, and the reason is they're one county closer to New York, and if you go by the Flying Crow, as the crow flies, they're about anywhere from 10 to 20 miles closer. Their active spots were Bernards, Bridgewater, Franklin, Hillsborough, Montgomery. Now, if you put them next to Clinton Township, Reddington, Raritan, they're all contiguous. They're the same spot, but spread across two different counties. And they actually, in their hot spots, sold 62% of all of their sales. New houses coming out of the market there were 590, where we were more like 482. And selling prices were at 520, where we were more at 430. They typically get about 20% more than we do here in Hunterdon County and Somerset, and they typically sell quicker. Their sales, as far as days on market, they had 63 days on the market. As far as our days on the market, we had 72. So they're about a half a month better on turning over inventory. Their only tough spot was Bernardsville, with 11 months supply, 91 for sale, 8 sold, and Southbound Brook, 19 for sale, 1 sold. But everybody else, I'm looking at some of the numbers. Branchburg, 23 sales out of 53. Bridgewater, 56 sales out of 149. Franklin, 58 sales out of 172 for sale. Hillsborough, 53 out of 127. Montgomery, 24 out of 119. And North Plainfield, 19 out of 44. They've got some really hot spots there. Now, I'm active in both counties. I sell in both Hunterdon and Somerset. My business is spread across the two of them equally. And I can tell you the biggest difference between Hunterdon and Somerset County is that you're going to pay more for your property in Somerset County because it's closer to New York. And you're probably going to get the same size house for 20% more, and you're probably going to get about half the acreage. But you're closer to New York. And it's a much more integrated area than we have here in Hunterdon County. Let's talk about the economic drivers, because what I just described for the last 10 minutes was what's happening. Sales are not bad. Sales are really pretty brisk right now. for it being November 5th. And why are they brisk? And I think that's the important message that you need to read here, is that I'm telling people right now, we usually wait until roughly March 1st, when the snow has started to melt and it's not going to be cold anymore, to put our properties on the market. And right now, I'm telling them, there's no need to wait. Let's put them on either in December or at the very latest. Let's put them on January 1st. The market is starved for inventory. And if you've got a clean piece of property, except for those ones that are up in the stratosphere, houses are selling very quickly. Two examples. I listed a property in Alexandria. That property listed in the mid-fours. I felt that property would be on the market until the first quarter of next year because Alexandria is kind of far out. It was all the way down on the Milford end of Alexandria. Actually, had a Milford zip code. That property sold in 3 weeks, and we sold very close to the asking price. I put another property on late September in Branchburg. I told you I cover both counties. That property was listed at 600, and we got within a few percentage points of 600 and sold it to the very first person that looked at it. Very unique house, a very unique set of circumstances. The house had six, maybe seven bedrooms, the way you configured it. And it was a large house, really suited for somebody with either a lot of children or a multi-generational family all living under one roof. You can only have one kitchen in the house. So it's not like you could turn it into a multi-family. But the house also sold quickly in less than 4 weeks, and it sold very quickly at almost full price. So I'm very encouraged. And at the same time that I'm looking at what's just happened, I'm looking at what's just about to happen. What's just about to happen is we're about to start a new season. And this is the time, sort of November, December, January, right at the Super Bowl. And it depends when the weather starts to warm up. So sometimes it's cold to the end of February. Sometimes it gets nice middle of February. As soon as the weather warms up, the market gets really active again. Sort of goes into that long winter sleep around now and wakes up again in mid-February. It ain't happening this year. The market is going like it's still spring. Houses that are priced right, houses that are marketed correctly, and houses that are nice and clean are selling quickly. If you just look at the overall statistics, 6 months supply in Hunterdon County, that's normal range. 3 months supply in Somerset County, well below the normal range. It speaks for itself. So the question is, that's what's happening? Why is this happening? Well, it's happening because of economic drivers, and it's happening because of economic conditions. I'm going to go through both. The economic drivers. There are still low inventory numbers lead to a bit of softening in the price appreciation on existing home sales and a slowdown of growth. It's turning the tide back to a buyer's market, or at least neutralizing it in the upper end. We have more buyers than we have sellers. We have more sellers than we have buyers, I should say. That results in a buyer's market. When you have more buyers than you have sellers, you have a seller's market, and that's what's happening at the very low end. We saw an increase of 12% in sales in September year-to-date, and we're ahead by 4% year-to-date. 12% increase in September, 4% year-to-date. The best year we have on record. And it's not just statewide, but 18 out of 21 counties have benefited. The counties that haven't benefited are the ones in the very southern tip of New Jersey. Increases in inventory have occurred at all price points above 400,000, with the 400 to 600,000 range seeing the largest jump of 4%, followed by the 600 plus with very slight increases all the way up into the $1 million range. The under 400 range actually saw a 13% drop in inventory. That's incredible. 13% drop. Where? Why? Because we're selling them there. Everything that comes on the market sells. The shelves are empty other than a few overpriced houses and some that need some fixing up. Activity still concentrates in the under 400 market, where the millennial buyers, the first-time buyers, are transitioning into home ownership. But this price point only saw an 8% increase in 2018 due to a lack of inventory. We could have probably tripled that if we had enough inventory. The 400-600 range also saw a little under 1,500 increase in units sold year-to-date while dropping 13%, as I said earlier, in the inventory level at the current time. During the same period, all housing sales above 400 and below a million showed very modest increases, showing confidence in the changes made on taxes and deregulation. There's also been an improvement at the very high end where towns have good rail service into New York, and that's more Somerset, more on the eastern side of Somerset County. Houses over a million showed small increases as well. During the same period, that's the paragraph I just went through. At the same time, the number of houses offered for sale in New Jersey remains low. We currently have 31,000 fewer houses for sale than we had 7 years ago in 2011, really 8 years at this point. That's 46% less. That was our peak. And, quite honestly, the houses, because I'm saying even though we have less inventory, we're still peaking in sales, it's because we're selling them much more quickly. Houses used to take 8 or 9 months, they're now taking 3 months. Current unsold inventory in New Jersey varies widely by county, with only 3.2 months in some of the counties, like Somerset, and 8 months in some of the others. Current, we still have an acute shortage of inventory at the lower end. I talked about that. 100 in Somerset County have 5% and 16% less inventory than they had a year ago. Let me say that again. 100 and Somerset County, respectively, have 5 and 16% less inventory than they had a year ago. And they have 17%, 6% in 100 and 17% less than in Somerset than 2 years ago. Somerset County is selling out. It has less inventory than it needs to be, to remain vibrant, and I'm working very hard to help them put some inventory back on over there. The market has changed from a seller's market to a buyer's market in the above 500 market because of the increase in inventory up there. Also, we're now seeing some millennials coming back. We saw a large transition towards New York over the last 5 years, maybe 10. The companies went into New York, the jobs went into New York, the millennials chased it, and they're renting apartments in Jersey City and Bayonne so they could quickly get into New York City. We're starting to see some companies come back and some millennials come back with them. Although I'll say, I haven't seen it much in Hunterdon County. I know Mark Salek, who's our economic development manager, said we were pretty equal for the last quarter to the same quarter last year as far as number of people. And I have seen it in Somerset County because they're bringing jobs in that require those skill sets. And quite honestly, if it wasn't for the influx of immigration from foreign countries into Somerset County, I think we would have a net minus in that job cohort. Let's talk about interest rates. Interest rates are 4.75. They were 3.6, 3.5 a couple of months ago. 3.75 is still a pretty good interest rate. We were 4.75 just a year ago, so we're a percent under. So if a year ago you could only afford a $450,000 house, this year with a percent less inventory, you have 9% more buying power. You can afford a $500,000 house. And at the same time, prices have gone up a little across most price points under $600,000 in Hunterdon County. So what we're seeing is a 1-2 effect of not only is rising interest rate or lowering over the last year giving us more buying power, the increase in price is taking away a little bit of that. And the fear of interest going back to where it was and the fear of prices rising even further is what's fueling the fire. National job front. U.S. unemployment rate in September came in at 136,000 jobs. I saw October since this was published, and it was very similar. And unemployment dropped to 3.5 in September. In October, it went back up to 3.6 because more people came into the job market, supposedly. And at the end of September, we had 7.1 million jobs and only 6 million people unemployed. Now, if you consider 2% of 3% of the nation is usually unemployed at any one point in time for various reasons. We're at full employment. Minimum wage in Hunterdon and Somerset County at most retail, fast food, grocery jobs is somewhere in a $15 per hour area. It's because we're having to pay more to get the same people. When all the kids went back to college and all the teachers went back to school, a lot of them come into the retail segment during the summer months, we ran out of people. So we had to raise the rates in order to attract the people in. New Jersey's job front is sort of the rising tide raises all the boats at the same time. I'm not so sure New Jersey's doing all the things that are as correct as they could be in order to make the job go up, the job unemployment rate go up, but it's gone to a fabulous point of 3.1%. It's in better shape than the nation. So let's not question it. Let's try to understand it. But right now, New Jersey is not only got the lowest unemployment rate it's ever had. It's paying more on a year-over-year, month-to-month ratio by about 3.5% than it paid a year ago. So not only do we have jobs, because we're paying a little more for the jobs, we're getting people that eventually can afford to buy a house. Rental markets remains tight, but you're seeing a lot of rentals built. In the year of 2018, 63% of all of our new units were rentals. However, they're building those rentals at a higher end, where it probably at $1,750 you have to make about $70,000 as a single to afford one. And if you're earning that kind of money, you're probably going to New York or very close. We're not paying that kind of money in Hunterdon County, and to a great extent we're not paying it in Somerset County, although some of the pharma positions are allowing it. Rental market, I think, will overbuild the way it's going, because I think we've overcorrected it. But in effect, we're in great shape on rentals. And one of the things, I talked to a group this morning, that we're starting to see is people want high-rise luxury, and they're moving to or gravitating towards New York City and areas like Bayonne and Jersey City. And in those areas, they're paying twice as much for a cup of coffee, twice as much to get their laundry done and to park as they are here. And as a result, they're spending a lot of their discretionary income, and they're not putting enough income away towards eventually buying a house. So I think the disparity of rentals moving to the east and single-family houses staying here and more to the west is getting further and further apart, because the less money you put away means the longer it's going to be before you can buy a house. And I got to be honest, most millennials don't think they want to have a house. If they could find the right thing, they're sort of living for the moment. They still think buying a house is the right decision, but it's a couple of years out, and those couple of years keep turning into a couple of more. It's sort of a trap. But it's not the end of the world. And foreclosures. We're in great shape. I can't say we're where we need to be yet, but we've moved from 75,000 to 40,000 foreclosures over the last 2 years. In 2017, we had 73,000 roughly. And in 2018, we had 65,000. 2019, it looks like it's going to wind up with something like 40,000 foreclosures. That's good news. Let's talk about what's happening in changes in lifestyle. The average age at marriage is now in the mid to late 30s. Used to be mid to late 20s. It's moved up about 10 years over the last 10 years. Families are usually having one or maybe two children due to the ease in not having children and the high cost of having children. Daycare costing about $22,000 anymore. 70% of all the homes in New Jersey don't have a child of school age in them. And of those, just think about it. If 7 out of 10 houses don't have any school age children, they don't need a big house. That's what's hurting the higher end of the market. 50% of all the houses in New Jersey don't have two people in them. We're accustomed to not having multi-generational families, except for the families immigrating into the area. And we're looking at a lot of big houses with no school-age children and some with only one person in it. So when you turn around to sell your high-end house, the market for that house has diminished to some extent, and it's affecting the price you're going to be able to get for it. 80% of consumers still perceive home ownership as part of the American dream. It's just what they want to buy or rent that has changed. Builders are thinking four-bedroom center hall colonials because that's the way we're zoned to build new housing. That's 10-year-old, 20-year-old thinking. And buyers are thinking high-rise luxury and not so much to rent, maybe to buy. So it's two different schools of thought. And if we don't bring them together, we're going to have a glut of housing at the high end that we don't need eventually. And we already have a shortage at the low end where we cannot find housing under $400,000, so people are going close to the city and renting. And as I said, 60% of all the new housing starts last year were rental onlys. We did see a sales slump at the end of 2018. It appears that we're now entering the next phase of our housing cycle, which is still active, just less robust, sort of normal. Think about it. 2000 to 2005, a highly inflationary level of housing. Prices were going up 15% a year. 2005, it started to correct, and by the time we got to 2010, we saw a large downward trend in values and a lot of foreclosures and short sales. It took another 5 years to sort through all of that, and that brought us up to 2015. It started to stabilize. The closer you are to New York and the lower your price point, you've probably gotten back to where the prices were. But the over 500s are still probably 10 to 12% off that peak price, and the over 750s are probably even further off of it. And it may not be going up. We're seeing warnings of an economic slowdown. I think it's already happening. I mean, if you look at prices last year, prices went up 3.5%, 4%. This year they're talking 2% to 3%. Next year, 1% to 2%. I don't think it's ever going to go down. We just don't see that happening in the market. But I do see it correcting itself, and this may be as bad as it gets. The effect on housing seems to be limited to curtailing the growth in pricing and not in a loss of value. If you think about what happened in 2005 to 2010, we had given mortgages to people that shouldn't have had mortgages. We had freed up money beyond reasonable payback expectations. And as a result, it didn't get paid back. And as a result, we went through a large correction, foreclosure in the housing market. It dragged the stock market down with us. Now, 2019, we're sitting with 50% of all the houses in New Jersey that have a mortgage have more than 50% equity. Only 4% of the houses in New Jersey are at minus equity. And 37% of all the houses in New Jersey own a house outright. We're rock solid as far as the mortgage and indebtedness market goes. People are not using their house as a cash-out ATM machine the way they were. And I don't see the housing market taking a hit. I do see a correction because we're in the 142nd month or so. We're so far down the pike. We've never seen this before on increased economic improvement that eventually it's got to take it. And the correction may already be happening. And if it does happen any worse, it's not going to be as bad as a lot of people think. Consumer confidence remains high on a nationwide base, and job and stock market increases. Most consumers see home ownership as sound investments. That's not changed. There's a bit of offset by the discouraging news that comes off the news every night. If you watch the news from 6 to 7, you're going to probably go kick the dog. And I'm sorry, dogs. I don't mean any disrespect. But it's not encouraging. It's confusing. It's biased. There's liberal news and there's conservative news, and they're both in the extreme in their own direction, and I think it's very difficult to get a good feel for what's really happening in Washington, and that is taking away a little bit of the people that might come into the market. affordability will never be as good shape as we're in right now because interest is going to go up and prices are going to continue to go up. Millennials make about 35% of our current home ownership and have much more room for expansion. They could be 50% if we had enough houses that they could buy. Central New Jersey's trend in 2008 shows an increase in home sales, but price increases in houses clustered under 400,000 where the first-time buyers and the millennials are at. The over 400 market holds diminishing slightly. The over 400 market is diminishing slightly due to lack of inventory. We've been adding it there. We could have some more. I think that's going to happen after the first of the year. And the over 600 range is definitely in Hunterdon County, probably still taking some price cuts because it's now over that 6 months' worth of inventory. I don't think major price cuts, but if you get up over 800,000, you're probably seeing a lot of pressure on prices in Hunterdon County. Merced County, just go 10 to 20 miles further to the east, and you could probably add 300,000 or 400,000 of those figures. You get over $1.2 million, you're seeing a lot of pressure on prices. But from $1.2 million down, I mean, just look at it. We had three houses sell over $1 million in Hunterdon County last month. We had 22 over $1 million sell in Somerset County. Somerset County is closer to New York. It's as far as people want to travel and go back to New York. It is very vibrant. It is very sought after, and it is a very good market. I said in a $1 million listing in Watchung last Sunday, and what I saw in that listing were 8 sets of people come through, of which 6 are really looking for a house. The other 2 are just out on a Sunday stroll. Those 6 people, and I said that same one 2 Sundays before, and it was raining, I had 3 more people, so 9 between the 2 open houses, shopping for $1 million to $1.3 million in Somerset County. We should bring some of that business back here to Hunterdon. 5-year forecast indicates slow but steady price point increases, but averaging 2 to maybe 4% a year. 2 to 3.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
The 100th annual Veterans Day Parade is stepping off at this hour in New York City, the largest such ceremony in the nation to honor veterans. This woman, Colleen Rudolph, is a captain in the U.S. Marine Corps, and she says,
an already spectacular event with over 25,000 veteran organizations and active duty military is only made better by the VIPs that we have here today.
One of those VIPs, President Trump, who just finished speaking at the event. The first public impeachment hearings are set for Wednesday. State Department officials William Taylor and George Kent will be the first to appear in the public phase. In closed-door impeachment depositions, the two have detailed concerns with the Trump administration pressuring Ukrainian officials to investigate Joe Biden and his son. And this is USA Radio News.
Well, look who's home. How was your day, hon?
Stressful, exhausting.
Lay down on me and we'll talk about it.
Oh, Purple Mattress. You know how to support me.
Hey, I'm just a mattress doing my job.
You're more than that. You're a Purple Mattress. Who cares about a bed with numbers when I have your Purple Grid to comfort my body's pressure points? And forget memory foam. Your non-toxic, hyper-elastic polymer minimizes heat, keeping me cool and comfortable the whole night through.
If you're happy, I'm happy. But you do have up to 100 days to return me for a full refund.
And give up the best night's sleep I've had since I learned to walk? No way. You're the only one I want to come home to, Purple Mattress.
You too can come home to a Purple Mattress by texting SHIP to 84888. And now for a limited time, receive a free Purple product with your order when you text SHIP to 84888. That's keyword SHIP to 84888.
Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. See purple.com for terms and conditions.
Record cold could be coming to dozens of U.S. cities this week as the National Weather Service is forecasting lows that would break or tie records in at least 148 cities between Tuesday and Thursday. It's Veterans Day. Plenty of businesses offering discounts and freebies to veterans and active duty service members. President Trump will be speaking at the beginning of a parade in New York City. The People's Choice Awards last night were one of the night's biggest